Again, we're going to look together into the Word of God in order to discover truth, because truth comes from the Word of God. Let God be true and every man a liar, as we read in Romans chapter 3. The fact is that we don't ever trust our minds, but we can trust the Bible. Now, as we've been going through the book of Jeremiah, we've been learning all kinds of things that we never knew before we went into the book of Jeremiah. It's really been an eye-opener to us. We've just spent a considerable time looking at Jeremiah chapter 32 and chapter 33. And there we discovered that God is working overtime, so to speak. He's really underscoring, emphasizing, making sure that we understand that even though the world has gone on for 13,000 years and the products of God's salvation plan have been very limited, very, very limited, and we don't want to go into that again. And yet God had made promise after promise after promise that there would be a glorious inheritance, a glorious number of people that would become saved and so on. And it's almost in Jeremiah 32 verse and Jeremiah 33, it's almost like God was apologetic that it hadn't happened as yet. No, he's not really apologizing. He is simply setting the record straight. Yes, but I am in charge, and it is my plan. In fact, we know this now from looking at many passages in the Bible. Yes, I made all those commitments and promises, but it's in my time. It's not in your time. And if you were doing this, you'd like to average this out over 13,000 years or even over a couple of thousand years. But the fact is, it's the last 17 years, actually, that the great harvest is coming in. This is when all of my promises are coming to full fruition in a glorious way, and it will go right on to the end, exactly what I have committed to do, because God is absolutely accurate and true and trustworthy in all of his commitments. But now when we get into Jeremiah 34, we have a whole change in the message. And when we read it, we're a little bit puzzled and maybe quite puzzled. We are reading here where God is focusing on the nation of Israel and concerning the setting free of the bond servants that were to be set free at the end of 7 years. That's just saying it in a very few words, but it's far more complex than that. But we're going to start out with, and we wonder, and God spends a whole chapter on this subject. And when you just read it, you shake your head and say, but really, what is God really teaching us? Is it something that he could have taught us just in two sentences? Certainly he could have made the point in a couple of sentences. Why did he take a whole chapter of 22 verses to make the point that he is trying to make? And it's not easy to really find that. We begin to read in Jeremiah 34, verse 1, the word that came unto Jeremiah from Jehovah, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army, and all the kingdoms of the earth of his dominion, and all the people fought against Jerusalem, and against all the cities thereof, saying, thus saith Jehovah, the God of Israel, go and speak to Zedekiah, king of Judah, and tell him, thus saith Jehovah, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon. He shall burn it with fire. Now, God has said that before a number of times. And thou shalt not escape out of his hand, but shalt surely be taken and delivered into his hand. And thine eyes shall behold the eyes of the king of Babylon, and he shall speak with thee mouth to mouth, and thou shalt go to Babylon. Now, when we read this, this is not that threatening at this point. It's almost like God is trying to tell King Zedekiah, it's not really going to be that bad. If we go back to where God first talked to King Zedekiah, if we go back to Jeremiah 21, verse 7, God put it in a little more forceful and threatening language. So let's start with verse 3 of Jeremiah 21. Then said Jeremiah unto them, thus shalt ye say to Zedekiah, he's the king, thus saith Jehovah God of Israel, behold, I will turn back the weapons of war that are in your hands, wherewith ye fight against the king of Babylon, and against the Chaldeans, which besiege you without the walls, and I will assemble them into the midst of this city, and I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and with a strong arm, even in anger and in fury and in great wrath. And I will smite the inhabitants of this city, both man and beast. They shall die of a great pestilence. And afterwards, saith Jehovah, I will deliver Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his servants, and the people, and such as are left in this city, from the pestilence, from the sword, and from the hand, and from the famine, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of their enemies, and into the hand of those that seek their life. And he shall smite them with the edge of the sword, and he shall not spare them, neither have pity nor have mercy. Now, that's pretty negative. That's about as negative as it can be. He's telling Zedekiah, you and all the people, you're going to be destroyed by the sword. You, terrible things are going to happen to you. Then he followed that, and we won't get into that detail again, and said, but those who gave themselves over to the Babylonians and allowed themselves to be taken captive because they realized this was God's plan, that Nebuchadnezzar was to destroy Jerusalem, their lives would be spared. Well, now, some years have gone by. Zedekiah reigned for 11 years. And now we're getting a little bit nearer the end of the thing, of the time. Babylon has been hammering at the gates of Jerusalem, and Babylon has already destroyed quite a few of the neighboring cities of Judea. So there's only a few, very few left. And now God comes to Zedekiah with a somewhat different message. Notice the difference in the message. When I read Jeremiah 21, it says, you're going to be killed with the sword, you and all the people. Now God is saying, and thou, he's saying of Zedekiah, verse 3, he does reiterate in verse 2, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire, and thou shalt not escape out of his hand. So far, not much difference, but surely be taken and delivered into the hand, his hand, and thine eyes shall behold the eyes of the king of Babylon, and he shall speak with thee mouth to mouth, and thou shalt go to Babylon. And yet hear the word of Jehovah, O Zedekiah, king of Judah. Listen now, listen. Listen what I'm telling you. Thus says Jehovah of thee, thou shalt not die by the sword. Well, that's already a very, very hopeful thing, because back in Jeremiah 21, the command was that, or the commitment was, you and all the people are going to die with the sword, but you shall die in peace. Not too bad, not too bad. And with the burnings of the fathers, that is, as they typically did in those days, there were incense and spices and so on that were burned at the time that someone was buried and who was a notable person, and you are going to experience some of that. the former kings which were before thee, even as the former kings that were before thee, so shall they burn for thee. And they will lament thee, saying, O Lord, for I have pronounced the word, saith Jehovah. In other words, there will be people who will be sorrowing because you finally have died. And so when we read this, here is King Zedekiah. Now, he had been told a few years earlier that there's no hope. You're going to be destroyed. You're going to be killed with the sword. And now God is speaking to him like he is. Everything is going to go fine. Now, is God playing games? No, God is still further developing his program. And we're going to stop right here and see once really what happened to Zedekiah, to see once if this followed through. If we go to Jeremiah chapter 52, verse 8, there we find the end of Zedekiah, 52, verse 8. And we'll find that the end didn't end up quite as hopeful as it looked like, but it ended up in a way so that it was all possible. Because in Jeremiah 52, verse 8, we read, but the army of the Chaldeans pursued after the king. Let me start with verse 5 of Jeremiah 52. So the city was besieged unto the 11th year of King Zedekiah, and in the fourth month, in the ninth of the month, the famine was sore in the city, so that there was no bread for the people of the land. Then the city was broken up, and all the men of war fled, and went forth out of the city by night, by the way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's gardens. Now the Chaldeans were by the city round about, and they went by the way of the plain. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued after the king, and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. Now, he's not obeying God, of course, but giving himself up. He is actually by his own strength, by his own wits, trying to stay alive, and he's not trusting God. But the fact is, when they overtake him, they don't strike him down. He's not going to be killed by the sword. We read, then they took the king and carried him up unto the king of Babylon to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. Okay, now what did God say? He said in Jeremiah 34, thou shalt not escape out of his hand, verse 3 of Jeremiah 34, and but be delivered into his hand, and thine eyes shall behold the eyes of the king of Babylon. So he's carried to Riblah, where King Nebuchadnezzar is, and there he stands looking into the eyes of the king, who is going to pass sentence on him. Now it gets a little bit more terrible, because it says, and the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. Now, that's a very important statement. He still has his eyes, so he's able to look at the king exactly as it was told. He slew also all the princes of Judah and Riblah. Then he put out the eyes of Zedekiah. In other words, he did not pronounce he has to be executed. He's not going to die by the sword. He's actually going to die in prison, as we're going to find here. But first he blinds him. He gets his eyes pulled out. That was not an uncommon penalty that was brought against those who were the enemy. And the king of Babylon bound him in chains and carried him to Babylon and put him in prison till the day of his death. Now, that's all that God has to say about it, but we do know that just because he was put in prison till the day of his death does not mean that he did not have peace, did not mean that when he died, there would be those who would be weeping and mourning over him. Remember the later on, the descendant of Nebuchadnezzar. We read in 2 Kings, the last chapter, and there we read about Jehoiachin, who was the king that had been taken captive before Zedekiah. And Evil-Merodach, in verse 27 of 2 Kings 25, king of Babylon, in the 37th year of his captivity, he did lift up the head of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, out of prison. And he spoke kindly to him and set his throne above the throne of the kings that were with him in Babylon, and changed his prison garments, and he did eat bread continually before him all the days of his life. And so it must mean that when they were put in prison, because they were kings, at least the kings treated them with some kind of an honorable fashion. In fact, in the case of Jehoiachin, finally he actually was taken out of prison and given very high honors, even though he was a captive king. So at least we can, based on what we read in Jeremiah 34, Zedekiah too, while he was put in prison, nevertheless, he must have been treated with some honor, because the Bible says, you're going to die in peace. And they are going to be saying, how did he put it in Jeremiah 34? They'll be saying, Lord, for I have pronounced the word, saith Jehovah, in verse 5 of Jeremiah 34. So, God now, let's back up now. God has come to King Zedekiah, and this is a much softer promise, way softer than what we read in Jeremiah chapter 21, the way he had spoken to Zedekiah earlier. So we read this, we wonder, why did God do this? Why did God do this? But then something very, very curious follows. Very, very curious follows. Because then, when we read, let's go on in verse 6. I'm reading Jeremiah 34, verse 6. Then Jeremiah the prophet spake all these words unto Zedekiah, king of Judah, in Jerusalem. When the king of Babylon's army fought against Jerusalem and against all the cities of Judah that were left, against Achish and against Azekah, for these defense cities remained of the cities of Judah. This is just kind of a little insight to tell us that Nebuchadnezzar has been pressing very hard against Judah, and it's almost over. And then God said in verse 8, this is the word that came unto Jeremiah from Jehovah after that the King Zedekiah, and this is what is absolutely surprising, that after that the King Zedekiah had made a covenant with all the people that were at Jerusalem to proclaim liberty unto them, that every man should let his manservant and every man his maidservant, being a Hebrew or a Hebrewess, go free, that none should serve himself of them, of a Jew, his brother. What a curious thing. Why am I saying that? Because, go on, in verse 14, where God speaks about this. Let me read verse 14 later on. We'll look at it in a little more detail. At the end of 7 years, let ye go every man his brother in Hebrew, which has been sold unto thee, and when he has served thee 6 years, thou shalt let him go free from thee. But your fathers hearken not unto me, neither inclined their ear. So here we sit. We're looking at this chapter 34 and asking the $64 question, so to speak. Why does God introduce this now? they are right on the threshold of being destroyed. City after city around Jerusalem has already been destroyed. The enemies are pressing hard. And now God guides them into a situation or into an obedience that had never been obeyed before. And it's incredible that now on this last time, they now get the message, well, we better obey that. We better let our bondservants go free. But then the next thing, they turned around. We read in verse 15, but ye are now turned, and had done right in my sight, in proclaiming liberty every man to his neighbor, that ye made a covenant before me in the house which is called by my name. But ye turned and polluted my name, and caused every man his servant, and every man his handmaid, whom ye had set at liberty at their pleasure, to return, and brought them into subjection to be unto you for servants and for handmaids. What occasioned that? These people saw death. They saw total destruction. And they, therefore, obeyed a law that had never been obeyed properly at all about releasing the captives at the end of 7 years. And now, because things were so desperate, they saw the end. Yes, we will release them. And then the next thing, they turned around, and the armies of Nebuchadnezzar had left the assault on Jerusalem. So, well, maybe we're not going to be destroyed. Maybe we're still going to be able to get out of this. What a crazy thing we did, that we released all of our bond servants. It's never been done. Never been done. And they brought them all back again into bond servitude. Now, that's basically the historical story. What in the world is God teaching here? What is in mind? It obviously is a test. It is a test. And I am finding that the time of great tribulation is a time of severe testing. At this point, we have to discontinue our discussion because our time has run out. In our next study, we will continue this part of the book of Jeremiah. And we trust that in the meanwhile, you may be praying, first of all, reading the Bible and praying that you might have some understanding of it, and above all, that you might be obedient to it, and that I might be obedient to it, because we, all of us, have feet of clay, and we know that only the Bible is trustworthy.